From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Ledson. It's early evening at the Neshoba County Courthouse in Philadelphia, Mississippi. If you've heard of this Philly before, it may be because of the infamous 1964 murder of three civil rights workers here, the Mississippi Burning Case. A towering statue of a Confederate soldier keeps watch from the courthouse lawn. Inside, Felicia Hickman, a tall woman with a calm demeanor, is taking the stand.
Tracy, help God.
Would you state your name, please, ma'am?
Felicia Hickman.
Felicia's son, Isaiah, sits at the front of the courtroom in an orange jumpsuit. He's handcuffed and chained. Isaiah's only 14, but in today's hearing, he's being treated as an adult. We've bleeped his last name to protect his privacy.
Ms. Hickman, you are the mother of Isaiah.
Yes.
Isaiah is indicted for the crime of armed robbery, is that right?
Yes.
Isaiah's tall like his mom. So from the back, he blends in with other adults in the court that day. But up close, his doe eyes and lack of facial hair give his youth away.
Just briefly, Ms. Hickman, is Mr. dangerous?
I don't think so.
The judge and the lawyers are questioning Felicia to determine whether Isaiah's case should be transferred to the youth system. That would mean getting out of the county jail where he's been waiting for a court date for 9 months. 9 months in adult jail. That's the length of a whole school year. So how does this happen? Reporter Ko Bragg has been following Isaiah's case, trying to figure that out. Ko came to us through Reveal's Investigative Fellowship Program, and she's been working on this story for the last year. So, Ko, how did you first find out about Isaiah?
So, 2 years ago, I had just finished grad school, and I'm bumming it at my parents' house, and I pick up a copy of the local paper, and there's this headline right beneath the fold, and it says, 13-year-old charged with armed robbery over a cell phone. And so there's not much context in this article, and I read through it a bunch of times, and I ask myself, how does this happen? How is it that someone this young is sent to jail over stealing a cell phone?
And then how'd you follow up on it?
And so this paper, like a lot of papers in Mississippi, publishes people's addresses after they've been arrested, including children if they're in the adult system. So I put that address, I put Isaiah's address in my GPS, and I drive over to see if, you know, someone's home. And I knock, but no one answers. And so I stick a note through a hole in the screen, and I say, please call me anytime, day or night. I really want to talk about Isaiah. And so Felicia calls me, and we talk, and she's really concerned, and I don't have any good answers for her. But I keep trying to follow this case through the system.
Ko starts to learn more about Isaiah's case, and in the process, ends up uncovering a larger pattern of unequal treatment for Black kids in Mississippi's legal system.
Of Felicia's six kids, Isaiah falls right in the middle. She remembers he was a chubby baby.
They used to call him Little Thumos. Oh, and he was fat. He had some big old legs. And he started walking before he turned one. And he wasn't no crybaby. Anybody could hold him. He would go home with anybody. He's pretty good.
When Isaiah turned 7, his teacher says he's really smart, but he's been acting out. Testing shows he has ADHD, which explains the hyperactivity, inattention, and impulsiveness. So Felicia starts him on medication.
And from then on out, he was all A's. He could sit there and he could concentrate, and he wasn't so easy to get upset.
As Isaiah grows into a lanky teen, he keeps a close bond with his mom.
He was just the one that was always real close to me. Like, if I was having a bad day, he was going to be that one to say something to kind of brighten up, make me laugh. He said that he was going to graduate, he was going to college, and he was going to buy me a house. He told me my first vehicle, he was going to buy me a Cadillac Escalade. And I said, okay, you know, we're holding you to that now.
When Isaiah gets to middle school, he doesn't want to take the medication anymore. He tells his mom it makes him feel funny.
I said, how? Explain how it's making you feel funny. He make you sleep too much, and I be wanting to go out and be with my friends. I say, well, this medicine is to help you, to keep you out of trouble. I say, so if you don't take it and you go out to be with your friends, You get in trouble, then what?
Felicia's intuition is spot on. Isaiah's cutting school and getting into trouble with his friends. Then the family moves to Philadelphia, Mississippi. Felicia hopes it'll give Isaiah a fresh start. That's not what happened.
Well, it seems like when I moved to Philadelphia, I moved into hell.
Isaiah feels differently about the move. He loves Philadelphia.
Then I start going to school. I like then like meet new folks. Then like they got a bowling alley. I was going like every Friday and Saturday meet at the bowling alley.
Isaiah keeps staying out late with his new friends. Felicia gives him a curfew and the talk that a lot of Black parents give their kids.
And I told him, I said, well, you know, you don't want to end up getting in trouble and you're going to end up in jail. And he's like, "Oh, mama, ain't nobody doing that. We just going to the bowling alley or we just hanging out." He just kept on hanging out until he got caught up.
It's at that bowling alley one Friday night in September 2017 that Isaiah makes a decision that would change his life. He brings a BB gun with him, and then he shows it to his brother.
You know, like, what you doing? And I took out running.
Isaiah sees a kid he knows from school. He makes a spur-of-the-moment decision to rob him with the BB gun.
When I saw his face, I was like, oh, yeah, he's shoving up like the rear.
The classmate thinks it's a real gun and hands over his cell phone to Isaiah. The classmate's mom files a police report. The next week, Isaiah gets called into the principal's office around fourth period. The cops are there, and they take him down to the station for questioning.
I just confessed to having a gun on me that night, the BB gun. They were like, well, you did it then. And I was like, if you say I did then.
Isaiah's upfront about having the BB gun, but he never confesses to a robbery. He says officers promise he can go home soon. He still doesn't know how serious things are about to get.
I thought the charge was going to be like going to juvenile, like going to a detention center or something.
But there will be no juvenile detention center for Isaiah. He's going straight to the county jail for adults. It all has to do with that BB gun. In Mississippi, gun crimes automatically put kids 13 years or older into the adult system, even if the weapon is just a BB gun. So just like that, this seventh grader becomes an adult in the eyes of the law.
Everything that is meant to protect people in the criminal justice system is lost on children tried as adults.
I talked to Paloma Wu, who's a senior attorney at the Southern Poverty Law Center. She says the juvenile system is designed to better protect kids. Youth court records aren't available to the public or the media, and children must have a parent or lawyer present during a police interrogation. But if a child is in the adult system, cops can talk to them without a parent. And kids don't always know they have the right to ask for a lawyer to be present. Isaiah didn't.
If you tell a 13-year-old, just tell us about the gun and you can go home. Do you know what they do? They tell you about the gun. What takes less time? Getting a 13-year-old to tell you what you tell them they have to say to go home? Or finding a gun?
Paloma says children should be treated differently than adults. And the Supreme Court agrees. In the 2012 ruling, Miller versus Alabama, the justices banned life without parole for kids, calling it cruel and unusual punishment. They cited studies showing that the part of the brain that controls impulses isn't fully formed until your 20s.
Kids that people say, you do the crime, you do the time, right? We have, in every other part of our law, said that kids are treated as kids. But when kids do something where a cell phone gets lost, all of a sudden we're talking about these kids are not kids anymore.
Paloma focuses on Mississippi. But in more than half of America, states are allowed to charge kids as adults automatically. Nationally, Black and brown children like Isaiah are disproportionately represented in the adult system, and they're also at higher risk for suicide, depression, and getting arrested again.
This is who people say deserves essentially civic death. Because when you're 13 and you have a felony, you're not going to college, you're not getting a job, you're not getting housing, your life is pretty much over in the civic sphere. So what do we say about ourselves and our communities when we let kids essentially be thrown away in this way?
After interrogation, officers take Isaiah to the county jail. He's already been questioned without his mom and without a lawyer. Now he's about to be thrown into a facility designed to handle adults. Kids aren't supposed to be housed with grown-ups under the Federal Prison Rape Elimination Act. So in a bizarre attempt to protect them, a lot of adult facilities put children in solitary confinement. That's what happens to Isaiah. He says he doesn't get a shower for several days, and he's hungry, but he can't eat.
Like, my first night, and then, like, the first day, I ain't eating nothing. It just, I ain't had no appetite. I was just thinking about what I did. It just ain't no normal feeling.
Paloma says no one should be treated this way, especially children.
In order to keep them away from being raped, we put them alone, which is one of the worst things that you can do to a kid, is to put them alone in a box. I mean, it's been called torture for adults. It's even more damaging for children.
After 8 days in solitary confinement, Felicia gets Isaiah out on bond. He's been expelled from school, so he's supposed to stay home. But he breaks his mom's rules and falls right back in with his old friends.
He started sneaking out, and sometimes I would get off and ride around to see where he was. I mean, I can't watch him all times of the day. I work during the day, and then at night, he's supposed to be in the bed. He would get out the window or just leave, and I would get up, and he gone.
Isaiah ends up getting arrested for allegedly stealing cars. That's a bond violation that lands him back in adult jail, where he spends his 14th birthday behind bars. He also gets put back in solitary at times. And the more he's alone, the more his thoughts pile up.
I was just really thinking, like, how my people don't feel, like, do people miss me? Mostly I was thinking about my mama. I just want to let her know, like, I was okay.
And Felicia, she's worried about how solitary confinement is affecting her son's mental health.
I kept telling them that I felt like he needed to be on medicine by him being in there locked in that cell by himself. And they kept telling him, you got to call the nurse at the jail. And I called the nurse several times, and she never tried to get no appointment set up for him to go nowhere, no kind of help for him to get no medicine. And nobody never got back with me. So he never had any medicine the whole time that he was locked up.
Isaiah says altogether, he spent 3 months alone in his cell. Research shows solitary confinement can make ADHD symptoms even worse.
When I was in there by myself, like, I just try to sleep. I sleep through breakfast and lunch. By the time I get up, it'd be about 3.
He wasn't getting any schooling. He said he was reading the Bible.
Like, I ain't never been away from home this long. I was thinking, like, when is it going to be when I go home? From all that time, like, man, this is a lot of time going to pass by. This something I can't get back neither. It's gone.
I felt like it just wasn't any hope because they had already had their mind made up what they were going to do with him. I felt like that he wasn't mine anymore. He belonged to them. I felt like, well, they done took him and it ain't nothing else I could do about it.
At this point, you might be thinking, this is a kid who got in trouble once, gets out of jail on bond, and then gets in trouble again. Shouldn't he be punished? But the question is, why does the criminal justice system treat so many Black kids like adults? What rights are they losing? And can a kid like Isaiah ever recover from a mistake he made before he could even shave?
The extent of the brokenness of the system can't be overstated. And the terror of being a child or a parent in the system of Mississippi isn't draconian, it's un-American.
Five months pass, it's summertime, and Isaiah is still behind bars. Then Isaiah's court-appointed lawyer does something most don't. He files what's called a transfer motion. It's a petition to send the case from the adult system down to youth court, kind of like an escape hatch. Cases in youth court have more protections, anonymity, expungement, and juvie instead of adult prison. But very few kids meet the criteria to transfer, or their lawyers don't even try. I asked Paloma about that. What would have happened to someone like Isaiah without this motion?
I know a kid who, after serving many, many months in jail after being accused of armed robbery, his public defender came and told him, if you don't take this plea, you're never going to see your mom again. So he pulled out his dreadlocks. He was sobbing and pulling out his hair. He could not stand the thought of not seeing his mom. So then he pled. We have the mighty weight of the state coming down with totally unmitigated force upon children.
On the day of the transfer hearing, Isaiah isn't brought to the courtroom. And no one really explains to him what's happening. The DA, Stephen Kilgore, argues to keep Isaiah in the adult jail. And he wins. When Isaiah finds out, he doesn't understand what's going on.
And I was like, man, I'm supposed to be going home today. What happened? Well, now that, I was like, man, I ain't going nowhere. I want to cry that day.
Just before Thanksgiving, Isaiah gets another chance, a new transfer motion hearing. He rides over to the courthouse with the others being held at the Neshoba County Jail. Shackled and chained, they walk past the Confederate soldier statue, into the building, and up the stairs into a holding room, where they pray before court starts.
Like, I really just wanted to hold my head down. Didn't want to look at nobody, just wanted to get it over with. Like, when I walked in, I just looked around and just hoped for the best. That, like, everything go well and I get to go home with my family.
Would you state your name, please, ma'am?
Isaiah sees his mom.
Felicia Hickman.
And gets choked up.
It'd be like the tears right there, like they won't fall. It like I could feel the crying come, but like it just won't come.
Isaiah's in an orange jumpsuit. His waist chains reveal a slender, boyish frame. Ankle shackles hover just above his sneakers, a pair of red and black Jordan 13s. Felicia takes the stand facing her son.
It was stressful. I felt like they was trying to throw him away, send him to prison.
Isaiah's court-appointed lawyer questions Felicia about her son's history with ADHD. The judge asks District Attorney Kilgore if he has any objections. He simply says, no, sir. Next, Judge Duncan questions Felicia.
What assurance can you give me that the same thing won't happen again?
I felt like if he's back on his medication, like he was supposed to be in the first place, I felt like it wouldn't have happened in the beginning.
Felicia explains how she's tried to get Isaiah on his medication, how she asked the jail nurse there to help out and never heard back. But Duncan doesn't seem to buy it.
Why didn't you go up there?
I guess I had to set up an appointment for her. Because she's not there. She's not there all the time because I've been up there several times.
I go out there often and I see her just about every time I go.
I've been several times and she wasn't there.
By this point, Felicia is starting to look visibly bothered by this line of questioning.
I really was angry. I really was upset.
But she promises to get Isaiah back on his meds if the judge just lets him come home. Duncan spends 7 minutes unspooling his decision.
I appreciate his young age, but I also appreciate the crime being charged with it. I appreciate the legislature and its wisdom making that a felony for people at 13 or 14 years old, whether you agree with it or not.
Judge Duncan takes into account what the law requires. What would be best for Isaiah? What would be best for justice? He says he doesn't know, and that the ruling was giving him heartburn.
And given the fact that we know that the penitentiary is not really suitable for 14-year-olds, I'm going to take a chance on you and grant the motion. But I want you to understand this. I took a chance on you one time, and I got burned. If I get burned again, it'll be the last time I'll take a chance on you. If you're committing adult crimes, you're going to be treated as an adult from that day forward, at least as far as I'm concerned. Do you understand me?
I wanted to cry again then, like I couldn't. But I know I was happy, though. I was real happy.
2 weeks later, I go to Felicia's house. Isaiah's somewhere out with friends, and Felicia leaves the football game on while we talk for a couple hours. Just before I get up to go home, she asked me something.
So, I wonder, is this the first time a child been charged as an adult here?
I start to answer her question, because I know this isn't the first time a child has been charged as an adult in Mississippi. But she got me thinking, exactly how many Isaiahs are out there? Over the next year, I set out to answer that question.
Coe's quest for answers leads her back into the roots of Mississippi's legislative history.
Well, you're talking about a regime that is explicitly racist and explicitly built on white supremacy. So they absolutely would have been thinking about black children, African Americans, right? By the time you get to 1940, this system of power is total power, and it is 100% rooted in white supremacy.
That's coming up on Reveal.
Support for Reveal comes from Roadside Attractions. Roadside Attractions presents The Warrior Queen of Jhansi, the true story of India's Rani of Jhansi, who led an army against the British Empire and became a feminist symbol of resistance. In theaters Friday, November 15th.